Well, I don't know what to call everybody. If panelists want to take a seat up front, I'll do just a brief introduction and then hand it over to Tom Grosch. So I'm Hannah Eagleson. I work with InterVarsity's Emerging Scholars Network. And what we do is try and support Christians who have an academic calling across the 15-year arc of their early career. So if you're thinking about graduate school, if you'd like to become a professor or spend a significant amount of your life in grad school and then transition those skills somewhere else, we try to support you by connecting you to opportunities like this one, by running a blog and other social media accounts, and we'd love to chat with you. This morning we have a couple of panels, and our goal here is to get some great information out there and to introduce you to some cool people you can connect with later. And we also have a short speed mentoring time at the end. So as we're going along, if you have questions, jot them down. You'll get a chance to wander around in small groups and talk to different people. And we won't get through all of them, but you should be able to get some of those questions answered. So I'd like to introduce Tom Grosch, the Associate Director of InterVarsity's Emerging Scholars Network. He's going to moderate most of our panels this morning and introduce our speakers. Tom, are there any other announcements that we should cover?
Well, I'm from the Hershey area, so I did bring some Hershey chocolate. So real chocolate is out there on the table, but I do put Hershey chocolate here. And there's also some flyers for our various ministries that you can pick up. So, yes.
Great, and we'll also have an InterVarsity reception on Sunday evening and an early career lunch today with the science editor for Christianity Today. That's just over in the regular dining area at the back where they have a reserved table. So we'd love to see you for all of that. Tom, I'll hand it off to you.
Okay, great. So now what? Choosing next career steps. And really thankful to have this panel here, and I think this was designed for undergraduates trying to figure out next steps, but I'm sure there are more than undergraduates here in the room. But nonetheless, really the point is to have the panelists just briefly share some of their own perspective, and if we have time, do some Q&A with that. So we have Bob Kaeda here, and I met Bob at an ASA meeting, I guess it was, at Belmont.
Yeah, that was quite a few years ago.
Yeah, so research in physics at Princeton University, which Hannah is also working at, so they've been able to partner together in ministry. Helps in a local church running a high school VBS with a science component. That's awesome. Got to hear more about that later. Andy Walsh, who I guess he was 15 when I met him 22 years ago at Carnegie Mellon as an undergrad. And he's just written a book, in case you may have noticed. We have a copy here. Faith in the Multiverse, Across the Multiverse.
Across
the Multiverse, right. And he'll be signing that today and doing a seminar. Is that today?
Tomorrow.
So make sure you don't miss that. Chief Science Officer, sounds a little Star Trek-y, at the Health Monitoring Systems. And I know I'm going to say this wrong. How do you say your name? I better not even try it.
Atonye Brey-Moku.
Atonye Brey-Moku. Is that close?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll work on, I'll practice that here. And she's right here at Gordon. And you were with us last year, weren't you? Yeah, great. Assistant Professor of Chemistry here at Gordon. Interest in biochemistry and molecular interactions. And interest in biomembrane-dependent pathways. And if you're interested in that, just talk with her afterward. We're not going to have time to do that right now. So what are some insights that you have to share? And maybe I'll just start here with Bob and you kick it off.
So, all right, thanks very much. Oh, by the way, if you've gone to the, or you attended the session this morning, I'm not here to multitask or anything like that. It's just that I couldn't get my act together, and so I wanted to print out some notes, but I'll have to rely, if I forget, on things that I've written up that I have on my laptop. But basically what I wanted to do is to share a couple of insights. The first is that I've always had an interest in science, and one of the things that happened after I accepted Christ as a high school student, I talked to my mother, all my parents about it, and said, I want to go into the ministry. And I think they had a pretty good idea of my makeup, because they said you could serve Christ without going into the formal ministry. And so with that, that was a good motivation for me to then consider a career in science. And as a personal anecdote, I still remember, and this is going back to not quite the dark ages, but many, many years ago, where with all due respects to InterVarsity and other church organizations that you go to as an undergraduate, the right thing for a person like me, who was a chapter president, was to go to a seminary or join staff. and I still remember a meeting of chapter presidents, and everybody was going to either seminary or join the staff, except when they got to Bob, when I rather sheepishly said, I'm going to graduate school. And not in theology or anything, but in physics. But I think that one of the things that I'd like to simply mention is that the very fact that we're gathered here as part of a track, as part of ASA, as part of a discussion of career opportunities for believers outside of the formal ministry is the existence of ESN, the Graduate Faculty Ministries of InterVarsity, and just in general, this view that then God has given us special callings. And so I think that to honor God, what we do is that we serve in the ministry that God has provided for us, and then we could elaborate a little bit more about that in the course of our discussion.
Great. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. So the one thing that came to mind when I was thinking about next steps was something that I figured out kind of the hard way in my career, which is that the skills that you need to succeed at whatever the next level, grad school, postdoc, faculty, industry job, government job, and so forth, the skills you need at that next level, the skills you have at the current level to succeed are necessary but not sufficient to succeed at that next level. And I figured that out at the end of my postdoc when I applied for a bunch of faculty positions and additional postdocs and research opportunities and didn't get so much as a thanks for your interest reply email. And so in processing through that, kind of figured out that there were things that I was supposed to be, skills that I was supposed to be developing as a postdoc that had just kind of missed me by because I was used to, when I was an undergrad, I'd studied the science, I did well in classes, that got me into grad school, I did well in grad school because I was doing well in classes, doing well in the research, just kind of continuing that. And all that was necessary to continue on to further opportunities in an academic track, but it wasn't everything that I needed to learn. And so while you may not necessarily need to master all of those skills while you're an undergraduate, to get into succeed in graduate school or postdoc, the skills you need as a postdoc to succeed at graduate school, that point is a good opportunity to start to figure out what those skills are and to start figuring out how you can develop them. And so I would recommend looking for opportunities for whatever career track you think you might want to be on to start talking to people who are on that track, maybe the next step ahead of you, figuring out what they're learning, what they're doing, and to get as much practice for yourself as you can. So, for an academic track, that might mean getting opportunities as early as possible to be involved in grant writing and figuring out what it takes to actually write a successful grant. I had a grant writing class in graduate school. That was lovely. I did well in that class. Didn't help a thing with actually writing real grants in the real world. I knew where all the sections needed to go, and I could write really nice sentences, but they weren't the kinds of sentences that encourage people to fund projects, and that was a whole separate skill that just kind of passed me by. If you're interested in, so I now work for a software company. If you're interested in working in that kind of private sector work, there are all kinds of internships available. There are all kinds of, especially small companies and all kinds of different scientific disciplines that need manpower, right, and have lots of projects that they'd be happy to have somebody be involved in to help provide that extra bit of enthusiasm and manpower and to pick up some of the skills that it takes to succeed in the business world, because that's a whole separate thing from academia. And I don't have a lot of experience directly working in government, but I work for a public health software company, and so a lot of our customers are government employees, and so there are also lots of fellowships and internships and so forth available for that. So take advantage of those opportunities as early as you possibly can. Get to learn the culture of those different environments. The culture of academia, the culture of the private sector, the culture of government, very different types of people. And so that may be, you can do good science in all of those environments, but you may find that you just fit in with the people better in a particular area. And so getting to know those folks as early as possible and getting to know what that culture is like is a great way to figure out where you might want to go. I think that was the one point that I wanted to get across.
Cool. Thanks, Andy. I think for me, kind of going on with what Bob was saying was knowing yourself. I remember as an undergrad thinking, oh, I'm going to do bio-pre-med because I grew up in a Nigerian family. And the traditional route was become a doctor if you want to help people or do engineering or lawyers. There were certain staple jobs that normal Nigerians would say, this is the way to go, okay, to earn money. And so I started off as bio-pre-med and essentially avoided chemistry because I was like, yeah, no. Like, I hated it in high school. I was like, it's not for me, whatever, whatever. But by sophomore year, I had to take chemistry. At that point, I was like, all right, I have to do chemistry. And I fell in love with it. So it was the weirdest thing for me to see something that I hated in high school, went into undergrad, and all of a sudden, I love it, right? When I told my parents I was switching majors, they're like, no, what are you doing? Like, in their mind, it was like the worst decision of my life. Like, what am I doing? They had a pastor talk to me about it, telling him I changed my majors 10 million times. And I was like, I changed it once. But in their mind, it was such a bad choice because they're like, can you be a pharmacist as a chemistry major? And I'm like, I don't want to be a pharmacist. So they just didn't understand, right? Like, what can you do with chemistry? That was pretty much what it boiled down to. Now today they're more appreciative, like, oh yeah, you actually made a life out for yourself, it's okay, you know. But I had to know myself and I had to stick to what I knew. Like, I knew I enjoyed it and I knew that. So it became okay, going against everyone else's choice for me and realizing what I wanted. And then, like he said, taking advantage of opportunities. So I started doing internships. Every summer, I was going somewhere else for a different experience. And then I was like, I don't like polymer chemistry that much. I like proteomics. So I started narrowing down the area of interest for myself. And that kind of helped me funnel my way into grad school, et cetera, et cetera. And just kept going. So I think one of the things I've noticed is because I do teach general chemistry is that a lot of people are stuck in, oh, this is what I've always done, and this is what I think I want to do. And I kind of try to encourage them to figure out who they are, mainly because I'm like, yeah, you need to figure out what you like. You need to try a few things, all right, in order to learn yourself within that context, like you kind of mentioned, right? And not be afraid to make the choice. Because sometimes you'll feel like you're going against everything else. Your family may not support your decision, and that's okay, because at the end of the day, you want to enjoy what you do. Right? At least in my mind, I'm like, money's great, but I really need to enjoy what I do. So it really became, how do you stand your ground as you're learning and discovering yourself, as you're getting older and figuring out the things you like, the things you don't like. And so that was a big, big point of turning for me when I made that decision. I do agree with everything they've said. I think, like he said, his parents knew him. They're like, yeah, you don't have to go the ministry route to accomplish what you need to. And he's like, take advantage of opportunities. Both of those are very true. I don't think you can figure out your path without kind of stumbling into it to some degree. And just saying, okay, this is what I like, and here's the opportunities. How do I bring those worlds together? And that's essentially what ends up happening. So that was the main thing I wanted to highlight.
That's awesome. And one of the great things about Emerging Scholars Network is, they share briefly, and then you can follow up with them and just continue the conversation. So we're not going to answer everything in the next 5 minutes or so. And it's an ongoing conversation. I think that's been definitely, with my relationship with Andy, it's been 22 years, and we message, on Facebook and what's going to go up on the ESN blog and all that kind of stuff. And so it's just a continuing conversation that you're involved with. And I think that's pretty cool. Bob has a number of students, graduates related to and continued through the years. And it's just amazing to hear that. I'm sure you do also. But I think we have time for a question or two.
You have 10 minutes of questions.
Yeah, all right. So what do you got? Any questions here? I can make stuff up. I can talk too long. So someone get their hand up and say, what would you like to ask them?
Thinking about faculty careers, what's your sense of how happy faculty are with their lives?
We have other faculty in the room too. I heard that laugh.
The one thing that I never quite understood is that why do then faculty seem to have this stereotype of a bunch of people who are unhappy and complain? all the time. And so once I was, you know, kind of exasperated because I had a colleague who says, oh, I got to teach a class. And says, if you don't like it, why are you doing it? I was actually blunt about that. And I think that, you know, part of the sense is that then you lose your first love. I mean, it's amazing how, at least in my estimation, you get so enamored with what I call the trappings of a profession, or, you know, in terms of certain ethnic and cultural stereotypes, you can be a lawyer, a doctor, or a disappointment. You know. Okay, and that's the kind of mentality that then drives people into various professions, where because there's so many hurdles to get through to become a faculty member, a lot of times people forget they should have gotten in there for the love of what they're doing. And you know that's my, you know, quick assessment of then what happens when you get driven too much about the rewards and the trappings of the title and the position, rather than remembering, hey, I got into this because I like it.
I think you also have to be realistic with yourself. I know I wouldn't go to an R1 school. Like, that's not the area I want to go into because it's very research-driven. I mean, I like research, but not to the point where I want the pressures of million-dollar grants every 5 seconds. And, like, just, I know myself well enough to know I want to interact with my students more. That's what I want to do. So I'm at a smaller school, right? So that's, again, part of discovering yourself through the process. I wasn't going to look for, oh, let me go for the postdoc training and then do this. And I wasn't going to end up at a Princeton University or something prestigious of that nature, right? But again, that's because I know what I want. Not everybody does. So you might get trapped in a situation where you're under way more pressure than you thought, you know, because you really don't know what it's like until you're in the situation. And so in that case, I think that's when you can be a little bit miserable, because then you're struggling to meet that level of intensity or expertise that you really weren't, I don't want to say you weren't built for, but it's not really what you're interested in doing. There are some people who are very driven and really interested in just focusing on research. So go that route. You know, like, do pursue what you know you're interested in. But yeah, like, I don't think for me personally that's something I wanted. I kind of knew in my head, okay, I want more student interaction, and I get that here. So I'm satisfied with that in that sense.
Andy, I mean, I kind of piggybacking off that, I mean, how do you deal with, I mean, the sense, you know, you go to Carnegie Mellon and then you go to Hopkins and then you go back to Carnegie Mellon. I mean, how do you deal with, you know, you're a failure now because these campuses aren't interested in you, and then you work for this health monitoring system, whatever. I mean, how do you juggle that? I mean,
right. So. Yeah, so I think part of that is breaking out of the idea that there's sort of a default way to be an academic. Most of the faculty, whatever campus you're on, they probably know how to get their job. They probably don't know how to get or be happy at jobs at other kinds of institutions. And there are all kinds of, even, you know, like you're saying, as a faculty member, there are all kinds of different faculty jobs. And there are all kinds of other science jobs outside of academia. And so the idea that, well, there's just kind of this one default track of, if you're interested in science, you go to undergrad and you study science, you go to grad school and you study science, you get a postdoc in that science, then you get a, you know, an assistant professorship in that science and so forth. there are other ways to be a productive scientist outside of that. You know, for me, that's turned into working for a little software company. I'm the only scientist there. All of my other colleagues are either computer programmers or on sort of the business, sales, customer representative side. We're about 15 people at the moment. That's the biggest we've ever been. I've been there for 10 years. and I've really enjoyed it. It's a great environment for me. I like working with computer people. I do a lot of computer programming myself. Part of the reason why I didn't succeed in laboratory science was that every time I had a chance to get away from the bench and do something on the computer, that's where I was. It took me a real long time to figure out maybe I shouldn't be trying to do the bench science because I wasn't it. But, you know, again, it was that default track of, this is how you do biology, this is how you do science, I should be at that bench. But nothing I did there was particularly successful or engaging or clicked for me, whereas I could do all kinds of things on the computer that were productive and fruitful and helpful to other people. and that other people couldn't do, because if you know a little bit of computer programming in a biology department, everybody, you know, loves you. and they'll bring you their data or their whatever. And like, can you make this do something useful? So you know, just kind of figuring out that there are other options. Getting outside of your school, like coming to a conference like this and just seeing all the different kinds of jobs that there might be is great, because again, the faculty at your school probably know how to get their job, and they can advise you on how to get their job, but that's not necessarily the only option, not necessarily the best option for you.
And if I could just interject, you know, something to amplify on this, I think the theme here is to find out as much as you can about the kind of jobs you might be interested in, as opposed to, in quotes, to be blunt, go for the prestige. Because, you know, one quick example having to do with Vacation Bible School is that I had a student who was finishing up his PhD, and he says, I really want to get a job teaching high school. And I had some colleagues who then said, what a waste for a Princeton PhD in physics, all right? But I said, no, wait a minute. He happened to be a believer, and it's a long story of how I got into this position, but I was on my free mornings during the summer teaching Vacation Bible School. And I didn't know how he was among young people, so I said, you want to come along for, you know, to help out? And he was a good sport about it, and I knew that we could kind of work it out through the schedule that he was doing in his writing and whatnot. And he enjoyed it, and he was great with the students, so I could, in good conscience, write a recommendation. He's had, you know, pushing a dozen years now as a high school teacher. He's happy as a clam. I still get together with him because, you know, he's teaching locally. There you go.
Do we have time for one more question? Or?
Probably one.
Okay.
Short answer.
I don't know. Is anyone else have a question? Or? Yes.
The lowly guy right at high school, what would your take be on what you like and you want to do versus what God wants you to do? Sometimes they don't completely line up.
A real quick anecdote about then how things line up is that, you know, first and foremost, you approach on a regular basis what God wants you to do in terms of then the kind of daily prayer that we have in terms of God's guidance, and also not to underrate what then God has created you to do. Because a short question and answer, what do people know what Eric Little, the great Olympian, did in China? Does anybody know what his job was there?
Missionary.
Teaching chemistry.
Yeah.
Because his three loves were God, science, and sports, in that order. And so that's what he did. He basically taught chemistry. So he honored God, being a missionary in high school in China, teaching chemistry. And I could tell you later on about how marvelously God used that under very dire circumstances in China. So think first and foremost what God made you to love, pray through that, and then look for opportunities along those lines.
I feel like I've always been the one who's going the opposite direction in that sense. Because like I told you, in high school I dropped out of chemistry, right? And then all of a sudden in college I loved it, right? I also said I would never teach, because in high school I used to tutor math, because I was really good at math. And I was like, I don't understand why people don't get this. So in my heart, I was like, I can never teach. So I programmed my mind from undergrad, I would never teach. That's what I basically said. I'm going into industry, I'm doing something else, get to grad school. I'm a TA for all of the recitation sections, which are basically me in front of 30 students every single time. And I'm like, why do they keep hitting me in these sections? You know, but I'm like, whatever, fine. And then one day I was reprimanding a student who kept skipping the section at a bus stop. And as I walked away, I had a moment with God. I was like, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. And I literally walked, like I'm walking away from her and I'm just talking to God in that moment. I was like, darn God. I was like, why? Like I've always said I never want to teach. And so all of a sudden I saw my trajectory, like focus changing. And I was like, no, I'll delay it. So I planned on not going into teaching. I was like, I'll do it later in life. I'm applying for different jobs. DuPont's contacting my advisor, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to go for. And then Gordon's contacting me, saying, let's interview. I'm like, All of a sudden, DuPont goes through a financial freeze. And so I'm like, what? What's going on? And Gordon's accelerating the process. We're flying you out here. Come for your interview. And I'm like, the moment I got to this camp, I was like, this is it. I knew. Like, I didn't even, like, at that point, I was like, I knew. I was like, all right, that's it. All right, God. I was like, okay, I guess I'm starting my teaching career now. And I don't regret it, honestly. So I've always kind of done this, oh, I'm going this way. But then somehow he'll show me my heart in different circumstances. And I'll be like, wow, I actually love this. I actually enjoy being with students. I actually enjoy certain aspects, right? And so I've kind of discovered myself as I'm going through things. Now I'm in the situation of, oh, learning how to teach. So now I'm in this new wave of it's challenging me a lot because it's something that's a weakness because I get things quickly. How do I express this to other people, right? So it's something I've been learning as I've been teaching here. Like, how do I teach this to other people? So yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with constantly just praying and allowing him to show you who you are as well. And like he said, what you're created for to some degree. So I don't think you can go wrong with that. I think he will lead in different ways, but you have to also be open to some degree with opportunities and experiencing different things.
Cool. And well, let's thank them for sharing. And please just continue tracking them down.